Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
News from the Krabby Coffee Shop is brought to you by AimHighConstructionMN.com.
Welcome to News from the Krabby Coffee Shop with your hosts, Don McLean, from Jason and Alexis in the Morning on My Talk 107.1, Garage Logic's newsman, Mr. FYI, John Haidt, and the crabbiest guy in the coffee shop, Kenny Olson.
Oh, shut up, Amy.
Oh, no.
I come to you today with an agenda. I actually took some notes, and I know what I want to talk about. And the first note is big mistake. I made a huge, huge error this morning on Twitter. And the only reason that's unusual today, because I make huge errors on Twitter all the time, is I don't care. And I haven't corrected my mistake, and I don't know if I'm going to. Here's the deal. Early on, before the Jason and Alexis show on My Talk 107.1 started, I received a DM from a fella that works at Channel 5, an overnight photographer. He told me about a crash in Buffalo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right above that DM was a previous DM of a video of a crash that he took, I'm going to say 2-3 weeks ago, that was on 94. I posted the video, and then I said something, here's a crash in Buffalo, Highway 55. This might cause a delay, and I let it go. The first person that responded was, what's this gal's name? Dawn, Jason's partner on his TV show. She's really cool.
It starts with a K. Oh, you're...
Kendall. She's a great, great gal. She does traffic in the morning. And she said, I have camera envy. And I thought, that was nice of her to acknowledge me. And I liked it. And then somebody an hour later... And DeRusha commented,
Jason
too.
Jason DeRusha.
But I have him muted, so he follows me, but I've muted him for some reason. I don't know why. And I trust my judgment, so I keep him muted. But I don't have anything against him. And he commented, so I had to dig out his, and then he said something about it. But then about an hour later or so, I received a text saying, that's not Highway 55. And then somebody responded to that, acknowledging, that's not 55 either. And then somebody later, that's not Highway 55. And all the while along, I didn't bother researching it. I didn't dive into it. I just thought, did I make a mistake? Or are they right? Am I mm-hmm. right? And then about 10 o'clock, 35 minutes ago from when we're recording this, I received another one. So I dived in and did some investigation and discovered that I made this huge, huge error early on, posted a video attributed to Buffalo. It had nothing to do with Buffalo. It was a crash weeks ago on 94 in Minneapolis.
Wow, that is a big difference.
And I don't care.
Oh.
What's wrong with me?
Well, it's because it's Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah, there you go. Use that.
John, there were times when I've made mistakes and I rush to correct them and I apologize and I'll try to do better and I'm embarrassed and I carry the weight around me around for a couple of days, wringing my hands. Today, I don't give a single rat's behind. I just don't care.
Yeah.
What should I do here? Should I just...
I think that's a great place to be. I would to be there someday because that way I would sleep easier. I wouldn't keep myself up till midnight worrying.
This stupid Twitter account of mine is traffic related. I try to stay out of politics, and I try to provide accurate information regarding traffic. And it was just so unbelievably wrong.
Did you just delete it?
No, I'm asking your advice.
It's still there?
Oh,
yeah, it's still sitting there.
You need well, just no. delete the tweet.
Do yeah. I acknowledge all the people that corrected me?
No.
Nah.
Just no. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, because they basically commented under that tweet, right?
Right.
So delete it, and then all of those comments will be gone, and it never happened.
Well, they'll still be on their account, and they'll know.
Who cares?
The old Kenny would acknowledge it. I think it's time to put Twitter down for a while.
You say this all the time, but you have big yeah. addiction to it.
I do.
You care about Twitter more than anybody else I know. But you also have more followers than anyone else I know that isn't a celebrity.
Why, though? It doesn't make any sense.
I think
so many people out there that do traffic tweets way better than me. You know what I think it is? I think it's the name. I think people search for traffic, and my account comes up first because it's MSP, Minneapolis St. Paul Traffic. And they attribute some kind of legitimacy to that. Well, it's not. I'm not legit.
You're too legit to quit, though.
I'm just a dumb faking it. And now I've made a huge mistake, and I don't care.
Okay.
You were also very early to the Twitter game, so I think that helps you as well. Probably also explains your addiction too. You've now been connected to Twitter for 12 years.
Oh my!
12 years,
Ross.
Really?
Why would you say that? Wow!
Holy moly!
That is not right.
You joined in March of 2009.
Twitter used to be a lot of fun when I had about 100 followers, and you could say virtually anything. And I remember when, hold on, I got to turn my mic off and cough. Okay, I'm back. I remember when it took a serious turn, this was a long time ago, 5 years or more, there were some protests on the freeway where people were sitting down and blocking traffic. This was long before the George Floyd thing. And I said some mean stuff because, you know, I was pretty mean on Twitter. And I got pushback from across the country. Yeah. Where everybody just jumped on me. So that's when I kind of started, when the fun went out of it for me. Mm. I think I'm going to take your advice, delete it.
Yeah, just delete it.
Ignore
it. No remorse.
And move on.
Because you don't want it out there for people to see over and over again. Just, you know.
Right.
Delete the evidence.
Or do I care?
You must care because you're talking about it.
Thank you, John.
You care to some point, obviously.
Oh, he just killed like 6-7 minutes.
Oh, I see now. I understand.
Okay. Along with that big mistake, now moving on to the second item on my agenda, I have a big, big, big announcement, and this involves mostly you, Don McLean.
Oh, no.
And I want to announce to everybody that's downloading this podcast, and I think we should all, the four of us, tell all of our friends and family, the ice is safe. I declare the ice is safe. And I sent you a video via Twitter.
I don't know why you think that this is funny. This is a video. You can find it on my Twitter, Donna Dark.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's Kenny walking out on the ice. He goes, I'm going to check the ice for you.
Yeah.
And he said it's about 3 inches thick.
At 30 yards from shore.
Uh-huh. And then you hear this weird, it's a crack, but it's a crack I've never heard before, but I have maybe in a past life because I almost puked watching it. Because it was a crack that reverberated in a weird, ominous, like there's something beneath the surface tone. Like I could hear the water underneath. Just like an echoey, weird warning that says, don't go any further. And what does he do? He walks further.
First, I want to acknowledge I checked the ice improperly because I was in a hurry and I didn't have the normal tools I usually have. I usually have a yardstick that has a little peg on the bottom to measure the ice. And I usually have a big chopper crowbar thing. And I'll, normal years, I'll walk 2-3 feet out on the ice and chip a hole, see where I'm at, right? See if it's safe to continue. And I'll walk another 10-15 feet, do the same thing, till I get out to an uncomfortable distance from shore where I know I'm going to go over my head and I do it again, and then I use the yardstick to measure the ice. This time, Dawn, just for you, and I only did this for you because your view on ice is just outrageous, and it might actually get you kicked out of the state.
Oh, boy.
What I did, and these damn cameras are so good. When you heard that crack, I had actually been jumping up and down.
Kenny!
Yes, yes.
Are you trying to drown?
No, oh. I just wanted, it seemed, it hadn't, usually it crack. I'm out there when it's so thin that it cracks as you're walking. And I hadn't heard a crack. And I thought, well, wow, I must have 4 or 5 inches here. So I jumped up and down a few times, and it cracked and caved a little bit. It sunk just a little bit. Yeah, it sunk just a little bit.
You're scaring Dawn more and more.
Okay, here's this from the DNR just yesterday.
Okay.
With a deadly open water season nearly in the rearview mirror, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources reminds everyone the lakes and ponds throughout the state have started to freeze, and that where ice hasn't formed, the water is dangerously cold. It's up to all people to choose to stay safe around the water or ice. I'm going to, and then they remind people that kids are off of school, and you need to remind your kids not to go out there. Here's a quote from Lieutenant Adam Block. There's nothing worse than when a time of year that should be festive turns tragic. He is the boating law administrator for the DNR Enforcement Division. Teaching your kids to be vigilant around the water this time of year and doing the same yourself isn't just a good idea. It's an absolute necessity. Each year, unexpected falls into cold water lead to serious injury and death.
Yep.
Wearing a life jacket is the best way to avert tragedy, since the initial shock of falling into cold water can incapacitate even strong swimmers. Carrying a good set of ice picks helps a person get out. I don't even want to hear any of this. Carry a whistle, a cell phone. That's not going to do you any good if it's submerged.
Right.
What? So you're in the hole of water. I don't even want to talk. Never mind.
No, we are going to talk about this because I have a story. I have a couple of stories about thin ice and where one time where I went through and one time where I should have gone through. So I was a kid, and I'm guessing it was before I had a truck. I had a truck at 15, so I was probably 13. I was running a trap line. And it was first freeze up, and you know what a muskrat house is, right? It's just a pile of mud and
like
weeds.
It's like a beaver dam.
Yeah, well, like a beaver house. And it's, you know, 10, 15 feet offshore in some cases. In this case, it was, you know, 10 feet offshore. And I had some sets in or near the house. I don't know why, but I had to get out to the house. The ice was dangerously thin, 1 inch or less. And this is really bad, Dawn.
Okay, oh, you're 13. You are already a trapper at this point. You're setting muskrat traps. And you have a full beard. Go on.
And I run the trap line on my motorcycle because I didn't have a truck yet. So I sense that the ice is safe and it's caving and cracking. So because I'm brilliant, I decided, well, the best thing to do instead of turning around and going back to shore, would be to spread my weight out. So I'm going to get down on my knees and I'm going to crawl out there. That way I'll be spreading my weight out. And I made it about a foot and the ice broke and I went under.
Oh!
Now, thankfully, it was, you know, 4 feet deep, 3 feet deep. I immediately stood up. But my hip boots had filled with water. I was wet all, you know, my head went under. So I was completely wet.
And it's freezing cold.
Yeah, it's about, you know, 20, in the 20s somewhere. I hopped on my motorcycle and I rode it. And this is a lake, a natural environment lake that has no houses on it. Huge lake, no houses, completely isolated.
How far are you away from home?
Probably 3 or 4 miles from home. 1 mile from the nearest house, which would be my great uncle.
Oh.
So I rode completely soaked over. His name was Wallace. Rode over to Wallace's house, came bursting in the door. He took me downstairs. We took off all my clothes. I warmed up. My parents came home, blah, blah, blah. You'd think I would have learned my lesson, right? Uh-huh. Well, years later, it was after I'd been fired from, I think, 1500, so this would have been 91 or so. I had the fall off. I was doing the same thing, only this time it was a beaver house in the middle of a pond. And I had permission, and two property owners owned land around this pond, right? The one guy I had permission from, nice guy. The guy who owned the other half of the pond, meanest guy in the state. Mean as a snake. I mean, really mean. So I make my way out to this beaver house. And again, I have no idea why. I have no idea why. And the ice was dangerously unsafe. 1.5, maybe 2 inches at the most.
How old are you?
This would have been
he's an adult
20,
by this.
Oh, you're an adult because
25?
You got fired from 1500.
Yeah, 25, 27. I don't know.
Okay, so the beaver house, is it on top of the ice or underneath it? What?
No, it starts on the ground underwater and then builds up.
Sure,
up. So the ice goes right up to the side of it. And I know the ice is so thin and it's caving and water is coming on top. I know I can't go back the way I came out there. The only way to go is to keep going. And by the way, ice is extra thin around beaver houses because they're swimming around underneath.
Yeah. Warming up the water with their beaver bodies.
Right. Right. Well, to shorten the story, I finally safely make it off the ice to the other side to the mean landowner guy. Guess who comes over the hill on his tractor?
Who?
The mean guy. And he tore me a new one, screaming and yelling.
Did he shoot you?
He told me he would shoot me if he ever found me on his land again. And I tried to tell him I didn't have any choice. I was out in the ice. It was too safe to go back. I had to come this way. Don't worry, I'm going to walk the shore. And man, oh man. And that those two incidences were the only real issues I've ever had with ice. Ever since that beaver house a story, I've been well behaved.
I do have one question about the first time.
Yeah.
Since it was in the 20s, and despite growing up in North Dakota, I'm not really a rural guy. Why were you driving your motorcycle?
Well, that was my only transportation. There wasn't
so
any
you just,
snow.
Even in winter, you just kind of took it out if it was cold.
Yeah, and I actually, as a kid, I rode my motorcycle year round, and I would dump it every single day. Every day I'd ride
I'll
it
bet you would.
Until and I would fall down every day. But that's just a sidebar.
That's the best part.
So, do you have, in order to be responsible and not be a jackass, do you, Dawn, have that email where it says how what you can do, what activities are permitted?
Within this?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Like 2 to 4 inches.
Oh, yeah. The minimum ice thickness guidelines for new clear ice are 4 inches for ice fishing or other activities on foot.
Right.
5 to 7 inches for a snowmobile or all-terrain vehicle.
Right.
8 to 12 inches for a car or a small pickup. 12 to 15 inches for a medium truck.
Right.
Double these minimums for white or snow-covered ice.
Yeah, the snow insulates ice, and it won't form as quickly as you would hope.
So you're telling? Okay, I had no idea that you could have a truck out on ice that's just a foot thick.
Yeah, and I do have, and all my buddies have stories about that, where, and I drive a 3/4 ton, 8-foot box, crew cab, huge, huge truck, very, very heavy. And we'll check the ice, and it'll be 15 inches, and it's like, yeah, that's good enough. And you'll drive out, you put your house out, and
it's
go
not
fishing.
Okay.
And then what we do, once we're settled in, we'll go drill a hole 20, 30 feet away, and fish out of that hole. You look out the window and see, you know, you can put a line down out there. And it's happened to me. It's happened to all my buddies. You drill that hole 20 feet away from your house, and you discover at your house you have 15 to 18 inches of ice.
But
at this hole, there's 11 inches of ice. So that's what the Minnesota DNR means when they say ice is never safe. It doesn't freeze uniformly.
It doesn't freeze right evenly all over.
Right.
There are currents and beavers running around under there.
Right.
Who knows what else?
Well, you seriously, you will not go out on the ice with me this winter?
No. No, no, no.
Even if I can prove to you that it's 15 inches or more?
No, it's terrifying.
Jason did it last year.
That's Jason.
Okay.
It really is like I must have, you know, I almost drowned as a kid in the ocean. So I have real water trauma. Like they couldn't even wash my hair.
Oh.
I would have convulsions and my eyes would roll back in my head.
Oh,
it took three people to hold me down.
Oh, wow.
To wash my hair in the sink because of the sensation of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then just to think about water under the ice, if I see like any shots on a TV show where they're like in the water and then they go, this is the worst, when they are submerging and then they're coming back up and you see like that for some reason is really bad for me. It's like the bubbling sounds, like all of it, because I was flailing probably and, you know, I was only two.
I've been meaning to ask you, so you obviously, it's probably a stupid question, you didn't go on the company boat trip a month or so ago? No, I didn't think so. Okay, I just saw the face you made.
Please.
Is that everything I wanted to talk? I sent you a video last winter of me out on the ice, and I think I showed you how thick the ice was.
I know.
You know, and it was a foot and a half or more.
Yeah, but also, how deep is the water? You didn't say that.
It was about 31 feet there.
That is awful. I didn't even know that the lake was that deep. Just to think about the lake is that deep is not good.
Yeah. There's a lake nearby, the lake I usually fish on, where guys won't go past the bay where the boat launch is, where you go out on the ice, because it has so many springs. You can have 18 inches of ice here, and then 30, 40 feet away, you've got 1 inch of ice.
Oof.
What do you mean springs? Underneath?
Yeah, it's spring-fed lake, you know, and for some reason that...
So it bubbles up from the ground from underneath?
Evidently, yeah. So,
and that's warmer or whatever?
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Dawn is never going out on the ice, Kitty.
No, okay. I'm sorry. I'll jump out of an airplane any day, but not this.
No. Which, by the way, that's an awesome video. I watched that video on your website. That is really cool.
Oh, yeah, on my YouTube, my old YouTube page.
Yeah.
I should put it on my ghost hunting page.
You really should, because it's a lot of fun.
It's kind of embarrassing because it's my first jump for when I was trying to get my AFF, which is advanced free fall certification. So I have two guys who are holding on to me.
Yeah.
So it's my first unassisted jump, meaning I'm not doing a tandem where I'm strapped to someone else.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to, like, I step out on the strut, I guess is what, I think that's what they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the strut. And the wind is like, you know, it's coming at you at like 140 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And so I'm like asking them questions and he can't hear what I'm saying. My jump master's just like, get out here, you know?
Yeah.
come on. And then people are kind of horrified when I tell them that, you know, you go over upside down. Like you it's like you're doing a back bend backwards over. That's how you launch.
You let it take you, and you go backwards.
And then you have to right yourself by creating an X with your body so that you're not tumbling. And
oh, boy.
That's, it's fun to sometimes watch videos of other skydivers.
What always surprises me is, especially when you see helmet cam footage, they're coming at the ground, even with the chute open, really, really fast. And then the last, I'm going to say, 3 to 5 seconds, they do whatever they do with those handles, slows them way down, and they come to a running stop.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, now I'm not great at that, I'll be honest with you. I'm not like these people that have 1,000 jumps. That's why they're the jump masters. I will do this thing. They used to go, Dawn, do not do that. I'm like, I can't help it. My depth perception of what is 7 feet below me, like you don't ever look down as you're like that's not a natural thing.
Right.
So once there's a flag out there, and once you're supposed to go towards the flag. Eat the carrot, they say. So,
yeah,
the,
sure.
You know, pointy end. That's how you're supposed to go into the wind to land. And I will start doing this running thing with my feet in the air before I hit the ground. And then you can break your ankle. Awesome. And there are people I know who have broken their ankle by doing that. Oh. But it's just like, I think I'm there. So I want to start running before my feet hit the ground. I don't want to, like, shatter my... I don't know. There's just something that...
What's wrong with
it's like
landing?
A dog that's like you hold above a pool and they're paddling.
Why can't you just land on your butt?
You can, which I do. I think I did in that first video. I think so. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I have face planted before.
Oh.
Like just flat, like I'm running and then bam, on my face. Anyway, I know we weren't supposed to talk about this. We had a lot of other things planned, so I apologize.
None of this sounds like fun, guys. I'm sorry. The ice or the jumping out of airplanes.
And if you watch that video and you're a skydiver, I will say I know that my foot is not in a great position to open my parachute. I just want to let you know. I know that my foot is not in a great position because it could, when I open my parachute, I could hook some of the ropes on my. You know, on my foot, because it's not perfectly straight. It's kind of up more and at an angle. So I know that that's wrong and bad, but it was my first unassisted jump. So,
Don, I do have a novice question that I've thought for years, and I've never had anybody to actually ask the question to.
All right.
So 7 or 8 people jump out of the plane, and you always get this footage of these 7 or 8 people. Mm-hmm. They're all like grabbing hands and making a circle on the way down.
Yeah, I've done that.
How do you do that when everybody jumps at different times? And how do you work through the air as you're free falling
to
reach out and grab somebody? That part makes no sense to me.
Okay, well, your arms are hand controls. So if you put one arm in, then you're going to start turning that direction. And then it's the same this way. If you want to go fast and down, you put your hands all the way back like Superman. And that will make you... This is not on
video. Turns you into a bullet.
You're a bullet. And that's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
It's called tracking.
Be. Yeah.
So you track and then you can stop. You can track this way, turn, stop. It's all, you know...
Oh, cool.
It takes practice for sure to get to where... That's how you get the videos of the guy. They jump out before you, the videographer... And then they're looking up at you, and then they'll have to stop themselves to catch up.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
The last test that I took, which I did not ever get my full license, I would like to go back and do that, I had to do like 8 moves. I had to do a barrel roll left, a barrel roll right, then I had to turn 360 degrees, stop, turn the other 360, stop. And then do a backflip and a front flip and then get myself right.
All the while the ground is all, approaching.
And my jump master is falling next to me watching me. And then he'll tell me, and also in between looking at my altimeter, because that's telling me my altitude.
How many feet do you have to be at when you open that chute?
Well, I would prefer to do it at 6,000 feet.
Okay.
Now, some people do it lower, which is not recommended. I mean, that gives you more time to correct things, because if your parachute opens and you look up and it's not doing what it's supposed to do, you'll have to cut that one away if you can't get it right.
Oh.
Sometimes you have to kick out. If it's all twisted
like
up there,
out.
You have to kick. Like if you're on a swing and you're all twisted up in a swing, just like at a playground, you have to figure out and look up as you're weirdly falling and know which way to kick your way out of it to get yourself straight. I've had to do that before.
Oh,
if
Christ.
None of that works and it is entangled in a really strange way, you have to cut that one away, pull it and eject it, and then go back into free fall and then use your reserve parachute, which you will pull immediately up here. Oh, nobody can see me.
Maybe we'll post this clip just so people can see how uneasy and befuddled John and I both look at this conversation right now.
And I just want to remind you won't go out on the lake when I've got 18 inches of ice.
That's why we start talking about this,
Wow.
Yeah.
I need
that's why you need to jump at 6,000, because if you have to mess with all that stuff and go back into free fall and use your reserve, it gives you time.
What do you make of these halo jumpers? That's pretty cool, isn't it?
What do you mean by that?
High altitude, low opening. They jump way the hell up there.
Oh, like in space?
Close to that. I'm thinking of the military people where they jump out of a big transport plane.
Yeah.
And they're wearing oxygen.
Oh, yeah. Because past 14,000 feet, you'll need it.
And then,
or 15,
and then they don't open the chute until the very last second.
They're trying to get down fast. I mean, that's some skill. That's why my jump master, my teacher, was a military teacher.
Yeah, so he's probably done those halo jumps.
Probably, yeah. He's pretty badass.
Have you done it at all since you've moved here?
No, I haven't.
Well, you need to get off your ass and jam. I think there's a place out in Woodbury that actually does that, isn't there?
I don't know if they're...
Out of Lake Elmo Airport?
I'll have to see if they're AFF certified, because that's the advanced freefall license that I want, so you can jump anywhere in the world. I sold my parachute to move here, by the way, so I would have to rent one.
I have always mildly wanted this skill because I am one of those people that every plane I hop on, I assume is going down.
Oh. Right.
So I always always consciously think, if this thing's going down, how can I survive this? And my one plan's always been bash out the window and jump out the window before it hits the ground.
Well,
but the parachute
you're up too
might
far,
help with that.
Yeah, you're going to need oxygen. They won't let you bring that. So it is DB Cooper Day, by the way, I'd like to say.
That's on my list, by the way. That's on my list.
Okay.
Before we get to that.
How much time have I eaten up for us here talking about skydiving?
In case people listening to the podcast don't know, Don is an actor and a writer and a performer, and you've done plays, movies, commercials, the whole deal. And the reason I'm talking to you about this is something went down at the Guthrie a couple of weeks ago where – before a performance of A Christmas Carol, a woman freaked out and went crazy.
Oh, no. I was at the haunted prison at the time, so I don't know what happened.
Okay, so evidently this is a different version of A Christmas Carol.
They do it different every year. That's what's cool about the Guthrie.
Right, and that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah.
So the woman objected to a Palestinian director staging A Christmas Carol, which she termed a Christian play. She also, when she got up, she spewed anti-black venom, removed her mask, and spit on patrons. And I've got a whole bunch of quotes here from a lot of them from the patrons who sat there and took this. One of them is from Kevin West. He's an African-American. He said, "I feel assaulted. Here's a woman telling people of color to go back where they came from." And the Guthrie is wringing their hands because they feel that they didn't apologize for this in a timely manner. They waited I don't know how long. And some of the patrons who witnessed the woman's tirade when this piece was written, I think over a week ago now, were still reeling. Here's a quote. "The racial undertones were so intense. I don't feel welcomed here," said, I'm just going to say, a lady who self-describes herself as mixed race Brazilian Jew. She was attending the Guthrie show for the first time. Another one. The artistic director, I think his name, first name is Joseph Hodge. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. H-A-J. Is that right, Hodge?
Yeah, it sounds right now.
Yeah. It's been brutal and gutting. You think every storm runs out of rain, but when does it actually end? We should have had it should have been an evening of great celebration, welcoming folks back into theater. It turned into this. And there's a number of quotes like this from patrons wringing their hands. And here's what happened. Okay. She started, Caldera, one of the director, they were, or Hodge, one of them was on stage making an announcement before the start of the play. Here's what the paper said. She started mumbling right away that this is a Muslim adaptation of a Christian play. Soon she started to berate two women taking a selfie, then started telling people to go back to the country they came from and calling a black man a black expletive. She was out for violence. Then she removed her mask. She started coughing and spitting all over a different person. And blah, blah, blah. So she is off the rails. The Guthrie at the time had a policy where they cannot lay hands on a patron to remove them. This isn't like a bar where they grab you by the scruff of the neck and they throw you through the window. This is, you know, these are gentle people. So they had to wait for the police to arrive, and then the police escorted her out. So it took a long time.
Oh, no.
My question to you, Dawn, is every patron who attends a play like this that, and I don't know what the right word is because I don't want to insult anybody, gentle? You know what I'm saying? My question, how come somebody like me or Reavers wasn't there, somebody who would stand up and say, listen, you dumb bleep, shut your bleeping mouth or I'm going to drag you by the hair up the aisle and out of here. How come those...
Where is anybody standing up for everyone else?
Where is that? What
has
happened to us?
That's just a question about humanity. I think people are scared, aren't they? They're afraid to get involved with somebody who could potentially sue them.
Yeah.
Because if you lay hands on her, she might...
Doesn't it?
I don't know what my rights are at that point. But
it kind of reminds me what's going on right now in the skies with people that fly and freak mm-hmm. out for no reason whatsoever. Where are, for lack of a better term, where are the good old boys?
Yeah.
Where are the people that are going to stand up and say, shut your bleeping mouth or I'm going to shut it
there.
For you?
Maybe, did everyone remain silent?
Yeah. They all sat there and took it, Dawn.
Mm.
And it was 30 minutes, too, by the way, before.
30
yeah.
minutes.
So half an hour.
And nobody stood up and
oh, my
said,
gosh.
Yeah. Oh. So the Guthries, obviously, they're looking.
I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
I really do. They probably didn't know what to do or what to say.
Oh, the Guthries just beside themselves. They are so sorry. They issued a long, rambling apology.
Good.
Where they're really, truly, absolutely sorry.
Of course.
And you got to feel bad for them. But I'm just wondering what has happened to us as a country where people, when this kind of thing starts going down, somebody doesn't step in. And I brought up Reavers, and John got the reference. You probably didn't. Because, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, whatever, Reavers was on the train, the light rail train. I think he was coming back from a game, going over to the station.
Mm.
And some dude was about to rob another dude.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, Reavers, he's like 8 feet tall and weighs 800 pounds. He's a big, big guy. He's got a long reach. Reavers stood up and said, no. And, I'm paraphrasing here, but he didn't let it go down. And then the guy threatened him, and Reavers said something along the lines of, next stop, we're getting off. I'll deal with you. And the doors opened, and the guy fled, and everything was fine. But where are the Chris Reavers of the world?
That's
my
question. Good question. I think personally, I get enraged when things like this happen, and I have to calm myself down because I'm the type of person that would start fighting with the lady.
That's what I want to hear, John. What
but
about
then
you?
You're like, do they have a weapon?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I mean, do they get scanned when they go at the Guthrie? Is there a weapon?
I don't know, but I bet they will. I bet they will going forward. A metal detector.
I would think they're going to add a lot of security, including getting rid of the hands-off policy, I would guess.
Yeah.
Because they had to sit there for 30 minutes and not address this woman even. Don't get close to her. Don't do anything. Just let her sit and ramble. So they have to reassess.
Oh my gosh.
Said they are reassessing how they'll react to incidents, but they have to reassess the don't touch, et cetera, don't they? I would think.
It's a damn shame that everywhere we go in public now, you need Patrick Swayze there to kick somebody's ass.
That's Roadhouse.
This place. Yeah, that's what we need. We need a Patrick Swayze to kick your ass if you won't behave.
I mean, I wish they had some duct tape. Duct
right.
tape or to a seat.
There you
right.
go.
Yep. Absolutely.
Possibly your mouth so we don't have to hear.
That's the airplane. That's what they
story.
Do on the airplane.
Yeah,
and they got in
trouble
too.
They got suspended.
Yeah, of course.
They should have got a huge, huge raise and pick your shifts and your champions, your heroes. That's what we need.
Wow,
Trailer Park Boys reference for you guys.
Yes.
Patrick Swayze better look out or Sebastian Bach might kick as you know what.
Yeah. That's great. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
I saw a Roadhouse reference the other night. You guys watch Yellowstone?
No, I'd love to start, though.
There was a Roadhouse reference.
Really?
I can't stand that guy. What guy?
It's Costner, isn't Costner?
Oh, he's great in that.
No,
yeah.
He's
yeah.
awful. He's
no,
awful.
He's good in it.
Worst
he's
actor on the planet.
Oh, shut up. Anyway, there was a reference to Roadhouse on it.
There's a Family Guy episode where Peter just keeps saying over and over, Roadhouse.
I think he's such a badass. We had this conversation, I think, on this show already. I couldn't make it through that movie.
Oh, watched it's a, awful.
Watched an hour
Roadhouse?
Of
Roadhouse?
This
oh, no,
horrible.
No, John. It's an awful, awful
oh,
movie.
Oh, it's horrible.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
It's awful to me in a good way. I love it.
Yeah, it's so
a,
bad.
It's so
yeah.
bad it's good?
Yeah,
yes.
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
you've got to watch well, the end. Yeah. Come on. There's a sex scene in a barn, I think.
Right on.
Oh, yeah, I missed that. Stupid. Yeah.
Yep. His place is a loft in a barn. He rolls into town in his hot rod, but then he always buys a junker car to drive around because he knows it's going to get wrecked. You know, he's a specialist.
And his hair is always curled beautifully.
Well, that's
even after
funny
a fight.
Funny you should mention that. The reference on Yellowstone the other night was the guy saying, I wish I was Sam Elliott in Roadhouse, and I wish I had Patrick Swayze's hair in Roadhouse.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I received an email this morning from a GLer telling me all about D.B. Cooper. He thought maybe I was too young to remember D.B. Cooper. I haven't responded yet, but I think I've watched pretty much every special.
Of course.
In the world that's been made about D.B. Cooper, John F. Kennedy's murder, and Jimmy Hoffa. And they all came together this week, the 22nd, right, John? Was
yep.
the anniversary of Kennedy getting shot at Dealey Plaza. So I watched a special on the Reels channel this week. D.B. Cooper, was it today?
Today is D.B. Cooper Day.
Today is D.B. Cooper Day. And don't you want to believe that D.B. Cooper got away?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then there was a piece earlier in the week, actually Sunday, about Jimmy Hoffa, a fun little piece that now they, you know, this happens once every couple of years where they think they know where Jimmy Hoffa is. And that was a fun read. So anyway, we're not going to talk about any of that because, John, you know what? Let me talk about Aim High Construction a minute and then get out that story about our guy in the woods.
Oh, sure.
And I want you get on the list right now. With aimhighconstructionmn.com. The waiting list is long, but it's worth the wait. Aim High Construction, they're going to be able to tackle just about any construction job that needs doing, from minor little repairs to big ones, decks, siding, roofs, remodels, a brand new construction. They can help you with everything, design consultation. If you're thinking about a new kitchen or a bath or finishing off the basement, they're your company, a full-service construction company, obsessed with quality craftsmanship, a very honest service right here in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And I actually used them in South Minneapolis when we were getting our house ready to sell. And they really helped force the equity. We wouldn't have got the price we did without that brand new the brand new kitchen, without the new deck, without the landscaping. Everything they did was wonderful. So if you have a big job coming up or you're thinking about it, get on the website, aimhighconstructionmn.com. Get a hold of Chris, the owner. Okay, our guy, and I actually wanted to spend a whole hour talking about this, but we're not going to have time. Can you give us the lowdown on my buddy in the woods, John?
Sure. His name is Burl. It's B-E-R-Y-L. Burl Novak. And the story was in the Rochester paper. It's down in that area where he lives. Fascinating story. He bought 40 acres of forest in 1966 for $700.
Oh, my gosh.
Eventually moved to an old one-room shack, to the site for deer hunting cabin, and liked it so much, he just decided to stay there for good and live there. That was 1977. He says he hasn't lived anywhere else since then. He hasn't slept in any other bed. Not one single night, no vacations, no nothing, away from the home since May of 1993. And all Burl will say is, I'm kind of a homebody.
Kind of.
He also hasn't hunted deer anywhere else. On November 6th, he was in his favorite deer stand, a 5x8 tar paper shack with a slide-up window. And the stand is just 50 yards from the house, about an hour's drive north of Hibbing.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's north. This was in Rochester.
Greeny, Minnesota. Yeah.
Overlooking an area where he says he shot dozens of deer from the spot, mostly with his trusty 270 Winchester. The annual deer hunt has become part of his life's routine. Already this season, he's bagged 24 grouse. He says it's easy to do. He just walks slow, watches, and listens on the forest trail. Over the years living out there, Novak said he's had close calls with wolves. He's battled with bears, but he says he takes it all in stride. He said he doesn't rattle easy. He's 71 right now. He shot his first deer at the age of 10, 1960, hunting alone. Still has the paper hunting license. It was pictured in the story. And the aluminum buck tag pressed between pages in a photo album. He says since then, he thinks he's probably shot 75 deer in the woods northwest of Cook. He has a memory like a steel trap. He rattles off dates and antler counts from hunting. He was born and raised, graduated from Orr High School in 1968. He liked cars, he said, and of course, girls.
Did he go in the service? Is that part of the story? Or am I?
Yes, he was in the Air Force. Let's see, I can drop down here. He attended a vocational college, and he had a low draft number.
Yeah.
So like a lot of folks, he just enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. Stayed for nearly 4 years, from 1970 to 74. Stationed at several bases across the U.S. Spent 8 months in Vietnam at the 483rd USAF Hospital in Cam Ranh Bay, where the base came under occasional rocket attack, where he says he saw the horrors of war firsthand with a parade of wounded on display.
Oh, boy.
Through his military service, he would come home on leave, scheduled around, of course, hunting season. He said, I always came home to hunt. That's what I thought about when I was over there. His one-room home, by the way, Kenny and I were talking about this off-air. It's a good-looking place from the outside.
Don, they call it a shack, and when I think of a shack, I think of a shack.
Yeah.
Like something you make moonshine in, right?
Yeah, right. I've seen it, too. It's a little white house, right?
Yeah, it's just a tiny little one-room
house.
But it looks nice from the outside. He's got a nice deck or porch or whatever.
It is tiny, Don. It's 16 by 20. So
yeah.
That's not a lot of space. It's about the size of this room I'm in, I think.
What else do you need? Seriously. Come on.
It has no running water. There is a hand pump outside a few steps, an outhouse, of course, and a sauna shed. He said, I don't have to.
A lot of Finlanders up there. You got to do them right.
Yeah.
Sauna. Sorry.
Sauna.
Yeah, sorry, Finlanders. Innocent mistake.
Don't go all Guthrie lady on us.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. A big barrel of wood stove heats the place when it's cold. Novak has a few seasons worth of fuel stacked up neatly outside. He's got a gas range when he wants to cook, a bed in the corner, and a small TV that he says he can get three stations over the airwaves.
Wow.
And he doesn't mind that. He says, why would you need any more than that? Everything on TV is also damn depressing anyway. So there you go.
Wow. This
no
is
Twitter, no Facebook, no Insta, none of that.
This is Kenny's goal, I think. Isn't it?
My favorite, he has a calendar on the door, but it's from 2017.
Oh, nice. My gosh.
Nice.
This is D.B. Cooper living out there.
So, Don, we've talked, ever since I met you, we've talked frequently, mostly off the air, about our bug-out bags and our obsession with getting out. When the S hits the fan, we're going to be, we know what's up. Could you live like this? Like
if
our friend,
I had to, yeah.
But you wouldn't voluntarily move alone to a little one-room cabin in the woods and use an outhouse for your remaining days on the planet.
Okay, so I was really into shows about Alaska for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I had like 8 going at one time.
Yeah, all life on, below zero. Never miss it.
Yes. Yeah. And so I fantasized about moving to Alaska. I looked at radio stations in Alaska and like eventually maybe just being that far away from people because I just desired to be not around people anymore.
Right. So you could.
I could. I would love to have the challenge of learning how to completely survive.
You need to, and I think I've thrown this name at you before, pen and paper right now, Dawn. You got one?
Oh, I've got my cell phone.
Cell phone, good enough. Dick Prenicky.
Oh, yeah, you've told me about this before. Dick Prenicky. He lived out in the woods, right?
He did this in the 60s.
Yes.
Where he, too, had been in the service. He could repair anything. John, help me out because you have the book, too. He was really good with his hands. He could build stuff. He could work on equipment.
Yep.
And
He went up there and built the entire the cabin, everything by himself.
He went up the year before, cut down all the logs, yep. stripped them, and let them dry for a year on Twin Lake, Alaska somewhere.
Alaska, yep.
yeah. Went back the next year, and he was staying in a buddy's cabin at the other end of the lake, which was unoccupied, and built this cabin by hand, by himself. With the tools he had brought, and none of them were gas tools. None of them were electric. They're all hand
it's
tools.
It's like the Amish way.
Right. And every time PBS Channel 2 does a pledge drive, they trot this out, and it's a long video series. And you can actually watch this happen. And he lived there until, what was he, in his 80s, John?
Yeah, yep.
When he finally, his family finally kind of forced him or made him, and he agreed. Because we're talking winters where it's 40, 50, 60 below. And he's going out on the ice, chipping holes. And you know, that ice has got to be 3 feet thick for water. His outhouse was in the cabin right next to his bed. Yeah, I don't know if it was a hole in the ground or it was a pail, but it was right there.
Yeah.
He built a big outdoor kind of loft on poles to store his food. With a ladder he could take down so the bears and critters couldn't get
it. Oh, my gosh, that's brilliant, yeah.
He would get the occasional float plane landing and drop supplies for him. That's where he would get supplies when he wasn't hunting or killing his own food. They would drop some off on occasion. It's fascinating stuff.
So
fascinating.
Listen to this. Have you ever met our buddy who works, he no longer works in the building, but he still works for Hubbard, Wheeler Morris?
Yeah, I actually did a charity event with him. We climbed the Capella Tower for Leukemia Lymphoma Society. He actually ran. He was first.
Yeah, yeah.
He ran up the thing.
Yeah.
Twice,
you know,
I think.
Twice.
He was a guide in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
What is up with this? He looks like a kid.
Yeah.
Is he a kid?
Well, he's a kid to us.
Yeah.
But he's the coolest guy, one of the coolest guys I've ever met, and he now works out in Seattle for a station out there.
Yeah.
But for a while, before he got responsible, he was a guide up at a camp up in Alaska, a fly-in camp. And when people weren't so much into fishing or the fishing wasn't good, they'd fly over to Twin Lakes and visit Prenicke's cabin. Because
really?
Now the
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Now either the government owns it or Alaska owns it or whatever, and you can actually reserve it and stay in Prenicke's cabin. But his mom, who we all know, has been to Prenicke's cabin.
Oh, my gosh. Nice. I'll have to talk to her about that
next
time I see her. That's fantastic.
His mom has been around the world, and there isn't much she hasn't done, and none of that interests me at all.
Right.
I have nothing to say about any of that except Prenicke's cabin. And that's when I won't shut up and won't leave her alone when we talk about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So neat. How do I've looked a lot online. I don't think you can stream this. It's like you have to buy the episodes, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
Probably.
And whenever it comes up, I usually record it and watch little bits. But this guy, Burl, reminds me a lot of Prenicke, but he's doing it right here in Minnesota. And his income, John, what is he? Is he selling furs or is he making knickknacks?
I was going to mention that. What he does is he trades his food with the neighbors who take care of him in ways. They'll take him into town to see the doctor,
right.
To see the dentist, and he will trade because all he does is hunt, basically.
Right.
So he
has all his
meat.
Food. He trades meat and that sort of thing. He also raises a ton of fruit and vegetables, so he also shares those. So a lot of that ends up what he ends up eating. So he doesn't really need a ton of money. He hasn't had a car since 2005 and hasn't driven.
What? So he doesn't go into town by himself?
Only with the neighbors. He does have a four-wheel ATV.
He said
it gets him a mile or so down the road, he says, but he never takes it any further than that.
The neighbor, worrying about him, Don, bought him a cell phone, made him take a cell phone, which he doesn't use. You know?
No.
Yeah.
Hasn't shaved or had a haircut since 2001.
Oh, yeah, I noticed.
He said, I don't have to live to suit anyone else. He says, my shoulder length hair falls out a lot, but it doesn't get in the way. So
it's one of those deals, Don, where his nose hair just blends right into his mustache.
I don't
which
like that.
Blends into
Let's
his
take
beard.
Care of that. Yeah. Neighbor, help him, please.
And from time to time, the state patrol guy will come over with a fresh roadkill deer and drop it off on his
cool.
porch. Yep. Yeah.
He keeps Henry David Thoreau's essays. That's the only.
That's all
he
reads.
Book of his essays. It's all he said. That's all you need to read. He said if people would read what he wrote in the 1800s, it would help them today. Simplify your life. That's what I've done.
So. Do you see the millennials reading Thoreau?
No.
No. First, they try to find it on their phone.
They're like, yeah. This doesn't say anything about me in it. They just scroll and be like, I don't like that.
So is the government okay with that? How come the IRS isn't crawling up his backside?
Oh, that's a good point.
He doesn't make any money, right?
He doesn't.
Yeah.
Everything's trade or barter, apparently.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is he sovereign?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Good question, yeah.
Does he have any idea there's a pandemic?
He says he doesn't see much news.
I think it mentions that actually.
Let's see. Here we go.
Yeah, that he was just fine because you know
The quote is: he says he's perfectly situated to guard against COVID-19 because, quote, I've been social distancing out here for 20 years.
See,
love it.
The reason I brought this up with you, McLean, is because we both had this conversation about bugging out and surviving like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we could do it. I think we are so used to the comforts of life, of an LP furnace, of a flushable toilet, a shower once or twice, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's doable. I think you have to start at a much younger age without any of those comforts, right?
Yeah, but if you were forced to, that's what I always think about. I will do it.
Yeah.
I will survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Gloria.
Gloria Gaynor there for you.
I'll do it. I have a real spicy personality when it comes to, I'm a fighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You've never gone hunting.
No, I really want to, though.
Oh, you do?
The DNR has classes, and I want to take them. They haven't done it in a couple of years, but yeah.
Oh. I would love to have you.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Don't you dare take me over to a pond, though.
No, we'll stay away from the water.
Yeah.
But if you're interested,
I have gone out hunting with somebody, and they got a deer, and I did help them field dress a deer.
Oh, so you don't find that off-putting? Well, of course you're going to survive. If you can handle that, you can handle anything.
Well, yeah, I've never shot one myself, though.
Yeah, you'll get the hang of it. I've often thought I should invite you and MC up to go camping. You know, I got a S-ton of acres but there's no bathrooms, there's no showers.
Yeah, I don't go camping places where there are those kind of things.
Okay.
How long have you camped at one time?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe a week at the most. The longest stint I did was, I think, 7 days in the Boundary Waters.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't like camping.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I love it.
Oh, I like my bed and my heat and my TV. But, yeah. All right. Well, I've crossed off everything off my list. You guys have anything you want to get out?
No, that's it, man.
I think we're good.
Ross?
Can I just say that I'm thankful for all three of you this Thanksgiving season?
Oh, he's sweet.
Shut up.
Now you made Kenny sick. Way to go, Ross.
Yeah.
Hit the button, Ross. Let's get out of here.
I think I had a lotto story I wanted to get to, actually, for you.
Actually, we do. Don does have a bunch of stories. Maybe we'll get to them next time. Yeah. But meanwhile, thank you for listening to News from the Krabby Coffee Shop.
New episodes drop every week wherever you get your podcasts.